It is Offsides. Mark Ryan and Diesel right here on ESPN Upstate. You're listening to the number one afternoon drive sports radio show in the upstate of South Carolina. So grateful to have you guys with us. 4 hours, 3 to 7 p.m. People stopping by to say hello all show, as has always been the case when we are on location. We appreciate you guys oh so much. Joining us right now is an assistant coach from the very, very successful Furman Paladins basketball team. His name is Tim Johnson. He is entering right now his second season with the Furman men's basketball program. Tim Johnson joins us right now on the line. Tim, thank you so much for the time, man. How you doing?
I'm great, Mark. Thanks for having me.
You got it. You got it. So Tim, you guys face Wofford this coming Saturday. Now, you went to school at Wofford. I can't imagine just how much your heartstrings have got to be being pulled in completely opposite directions. I'm going to ask you a question, Tim. Did you hate Furman when you played when you went to Wofford? Did you hate Furman then?
Did I hate Furman? I can't say I hated Furman. I certainly love to compete against them and obviously wanted to win that game, but ironically, when I was a player there, there were so many different connections between, there were friendships that developed just from being in close proximity as a student, as well as when I was a player there. I mean, our head coach, he might have been best friends with Nico Medved, who was the head coach at the time. These guys would, frequent in the lobby during the SoCon tournament. They'd grab a meal together and things like that. So it was never really a contentious relationship. It was more of a mutual respect and I think a competitive, was definitely there. We wanted to compete. We wanted to be better, but no, never hate.
You never hated Furman. I guess that explains why you can come to Furman and be a coach. So I take it there was no second guessing about this opportunity when it came along because of the rivalry here in the upstate. There was no issue there for you.
No, I think, at the end of the day, it's looking at the broader picture of things. And one, Bob Ritchie's an incredible recruiter. And I think the easier question that, is why not Furman, right? And, you look at top 50 school liberal arts in the country, Bob Ritchie, in my opinion, and many others' opinion, he's probably a top 50 coach in the country. Obviously I love this area, a lot of friends in this area. You have an opportunity to present families with a world-class education to an area that I know so well. So you look at all those facts, that made it a pretty easy decision. One of my favorite coaches of all time was who I was a player for. He was an assistant at the time, Mike Boynton. Mike Boynton has spent time at Furman. And then you look at the current staff at Wofford now, Coach McCauley's most recent location was Furman. I think he's hired people from his staff on Furman. Mike hired people on his staff from Furman. There's a lot of connections and a lot of, it's more of a mutual respect. And I don't know that, Mike viewed it that way, looking at his relationship with Jay and Nico, and certainly I never viewed it that way with my relationship with, Boyan and some of the other people that had spent time on this campus, as well as Bob Ritchie and Jimmy Williams and those types.
Assistant coach of the Furman Paladins men's basketball team, Tim Johnson, joining us right here on Offsides, Mark and Diesel, ESPN Upstate. Really, really great to have Tim on with us. Tim, we recently ran a poll, and we said, who is the third most popular college team in the upstate? One and two are going to be Clemson and South Carolina. Georgia won number three, but I'll tell you, it was real close between Georgia and Furman, and I actually firmly believe that Furman has a chance to become Greenville's team. I think they're well on their way to becoming Greenville's team. And that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about our partnership here, is I think, we can help you achieve that goal. Not only that, Coach, but I think when you consider what's about to happen in college athletics with name, image, and likeness, I think a lot of people are going to start to look at the FCS level lovingly, knowing that they're seeing perhaps the sport now, football and basketball, at their most pure level. Before dollars and greed really gets its grubby paws on the sports of college sports that we love so much. So I'd love your thoughts on just kind of firming their standing here in the upstate and the fact that I believe they've got a great chance to become Greenville's team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and another reason you asked, you know, coming to a place like this, I sat down with our leadership here. I sat down with Coach Richie and just people with incredible vision for not only what we've become, but also what we're going to be. You know, there's lots of discussions about, you know, what's a year down the line, what's 5 years, what's 10 years, what's this place look like in 20 years. And as successful as we've been, as popular as this thing has been, there are people that want to see this grow to the next level. And how do we get there? What does that look like? How do we have to invest? You know, you see us go downtown and play games because we want to reach the community. We want to be Greenville's team. And, you know, that is all about, you know, the vision of the people here. So I definitely think, you know, as good as we've been and as, you know, as good of a job as the leadership has done here, the best days definitely ahead. You know, I think when you look at the strategic planning around not only our team, but all of the teams at Furman and the investments made into our student athletes, not just financially, but just in our time and how can we make this the best experience for them. And at the end of the day, we offer a product and we're going to continue to, you know, high level student athletes are going to want to be here. So when you have that going for you, of course, the future is bright. As far as the, you know, the money and all that stuff that's going to change in college athletics, you know, that stuff is dicey and it's a little over my head. I'm not as probably well versed. I'm really old school in that stuff. You know, I think your education is plenty. You know, you get an opportunity to change your life. And more importantly, you get an opportunity to change your way of thinking, right? Your perspective and what you get socially from college and what you get in terms of, you know, your friendships and those type things. I think it has a monetary value, but it also has a value in just what it does for your own life, you know. So the money's going to make it different, but hopefully, you know, here at least we get to continue to recruit, you know, kids from high-level families that have the right perspective, and hopefully we can keep it as pure as possible.
Tim Johnson, Furman assistant basketball coach. Tim, we had CBS bracketologist Jerry Palm on a few days ago. He puts Furman just on the outside of an at-large bid into the tournament. I'm going to give you an opportunity here to gush on some of your players here, but talk about some of the individuals and individual performances this season that'll make it really tough to keep Furman out of an at-large.
No, that's great. You know, we know nobody's got us picked, and you know, we know everybody's, you know, it's Furman, right? So everybody expects that we get to this point and this or that happens, and we own that, and we're ready to fight that. And it's one of those things where, you know, Furman's going to the NCAA tournament. You know, I can say that with full confidence. Now, whether this team does it this year, that remains to be seen. But this place, this school, this staff, Bob Richie is going to the NCAA tournament, and we're also going to be very successful with multiple championships. But that's, I can say that in confidence because of what we invest in our habits and, again, the vision of the place. But is, you know, is that going to happen next year? Are we going to go win it this year? Those things remain to be seen. I think it's really hard to predict that. But we know we're not picked. You know, we know there are, you know, people are going to tend to, you know, it hasn't been done here in 30, 40 years, right? So since 1980. So, you know, people have every right to have us on the outside looking in. But it's all fuel to you know, push us to the next level. And you know, like I said, eventually, you know, we're as many times as we fall, we're going to get up and continue to battle. And, you know, as far as our players, unbelievable progress. I think that's pretty obvious. Just looking at our trajectory, I think we're peaking at the right time. You know, you look at Noah Gurley's progress in this last week. You look at Mike Bothwell's coming along. You look at Alex Hunter. And really, it goes, our bench is really what's come along. I mean, we were playing 6-7 guys, and now we're able to play 10, really 11, is because of the growth of our players. So we're a lot stronger now, and that's not going to change, but that's awesome. You know, I love being on the outside looking in, and you mentioned the reason to come to Furman. We are the underdogs. You know, nobody believes that we're going to get this done, and that's fine. And we have to own that. And like I said, it's going to happen, and no better time than the present.
Tim Johnson, assistant basketball coach at Furman, joining us right here on Offsides ESPN Upstate. Look, not only do we have the rivalry coming up this weekend, a game that can be heard right here on the ESPN Upstate family of stations, Furman and Wofford, coming your way, 6:30 p.m. coverage beginning on ESPN Upstate this Saturday. You have the rivalry, but you also have first place on the line with this particular game, Tim. It gets no bigger than this. Last time out, Wofford got the better end of you. What does Furman need to do differently this time to get a better outcome?
Yeah, just remain together. You know, I think our approach to this game has been the same. You know, every time you won some, you lost some. But I think the biggest thing is we have such high-level guys, and they want to take ownership of the situation. So they want to go in there, and they want to, you know, win, right? But the way you win is important, and I think we have to lean on each other. So less of a follow me mentality and more of a let's go do this together. And that doesn't matter if it's, you know, who the opponent is. That's got to be consistent every night. So, yeah, it's Wofford versus Furman, and that's going to be really, really a cool thing for our league. But to be honest, it could be anybody that we're playing. We're more focused on the how, you know, as opposed to the who. And I think that's been our messaging all week, and that was the same message we had against Citadel, that we had against Samford, that we had against Mercer. It won't change. It's about us, and it's about how we're going to do what we're going to do. It doesn't matter who's going to be on the other side of that line, but we got to approach it the same way. So it's going to be really, really fun, and I'm excited for our league. I mean, that's a great thing. If you had a rivalry game for all the marbles, that's a great thing for the SoCon. So we're excited about it, and we understand it, but our mentality won't change headed into this game.
His name is Tim Johnson. He is an assistant basketball coach at Furman University. They're taking on Wofford this weekend. First place is on the line in the Southern Conference, the always valuable number one seed as well in the conference tournament. Coach, thank you so very much. We will be pulling for you guys big time this weekend against Wofford. Great to meet you. Great to catch up with you. Looking forward to doing it again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys, and we're so lucky to have you. Look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you so very much. Tim Johnson. Tim Johnson, assistant men's basketball coach at Furman University. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. And I got a kick out of his answers to, you know, the whole, you know, any trepidation about coaching for Furman when you played at Wofford. And it makes me think that the supposed bad blood that our texters would have us believe doesn't really exist among players and coaches and staff. It does seem like they're competitive, but it does also seem like there's a lot of respect there as well. All right, folks, coming up next on the show, we are going to hear from Luke Easterling from USA Today Sports. And Luke has a really controversial opinion surrounding Justin Fields. I'm interested to hear what you have to say about that next, right here on Offsides, ESPN Upstate. The text line is buzzing early and often today. Absolutely love that. Thank you guys so much. I will get to those in the very, very next segment. But joining us right now on the show is somebody who is really a great American story. I'm not lying to you here. I want him to share his story with you today before we get to kind of the draft talk. Luke Easterling has now been a longtime friend of mine. We met when I was working in Tampa. This was back in 2013 and 2014. And he was coming on my show then, and I was like, good God, this guy is way better than his Twitter following at that time would indicate, right? I'm like, man, this guy's going to be discovered, and it's gonna, like, every single time we have him on, the content is top-notch. You know how I feel about Josh Pate, and now Josh Pate is blowing up? I had the same feeling about Luke Easterling years later, right? And during the time that we've had Josh Pate on the show, his Twitter following has grown from 2,000 to 12,000. So, in any case, Luke Easterling from USA Today Sports, the Draft Wire, and the Bucks Wire, He is still beside himself at the Buccaneers Super Bowl victory with delight. Luke Easterling joins us right now on Offsides ESPN Upstate. Luke, always great to have you on the show, my brother. Can you just tell our audience, I know there are aspiring sports media types listening right now, and I'd love for them to hear your version of the Luke Easterling story.
I mean, first of all, check's in the mail, buddy. I feel like this. I'm going to keep coming on your show just for the ego boost at this point.
There you go. Sure.
It feels nice to be reminded of the climb, right? I appreciate
it.
I know it's you know, I hope it can encourage people, right? I mean, where I am now was born in a library computer lab when I was 14 years old, making the ugliest football blog you've ever seen that nobody read. Just because I had a passion for doing this. I played the sport in high school, but, you know, it didn't take a whole lot to realize that probably wasn't going to be how I made my money growing up. It was probably not as good for my brain either. But, you know, it was just something I was always passionate about. I come from a family of writers. My mom's a writer and a teacher. My brother writes the Halo video games for anybody who likes to play those.
I didn't know that.
Sports and football.
My brother's way cooler than I am.
He does. When people find out on Twitter, you know, that they follow me for sports, and then they find out who Jeff, my brother, is, they're like, oh, never mind. Yeah, your brother's cooler than you are, which I'm used to, dating back a long time. But, it's something that, you know, it boils down to I've just always loved doing this for so much. And long before anybody ever read or cared what I thought about it, I think everybody who really succeeds at something that they believe in, you know, it starts with that love of what you're doing. Because if you're willing to do it for nobody, that's what will sustain you. If it becomes your career and it becomes your job. So I've just been so lucky and so blessed to have so many opportunities to, as I've worked my way kind of up the ladder, I guess, and had different opportunities at different outlets. I've been with Bleacher Report. I worked at the Tampa Tribune. That's kind of where I cut my teeth right out of high school. I got a great, foot in the door job there, just, answering phones in the newsroom when I was 18 years old. Made so many wonderful relationships with all the reporters there and really got to see real journalism being done, not just in sports, but in every beat and every area of journalism for a newspaper of that stature. I went to school at USF for a little while and slowly started to piece together what sports journalism was moving towards and the digital world that we were about to be launched into in terms of that. And I was just really lucky and really blessed. I feel like, who you know is what gets you in the door, but what you know and how well you can do it is what keeps you there. And I've tried to sharpen both of those edges of that sword along the way and make sure that once I do get an opportunity, and there's so many people who have afforded me those opportunities, that once I get there, I can earn my keep. And, thankfully I've done it to this point. I hope it continues. I love my job right now. It's a dream job for me getting to cover the draft and the Bucks and double dip, my two favorite things to write about and talk about in the world. And I hope I get to do this for a long time, man.
Luke Easterling, you can follow him on Twitter at Luke Easterling, and you can read his work, draftwire.usatoday.com. All right, Luke, enough of the pleasantries. Put up your dukes. Give me the Luke Easterling top six quarterbacks in the 2021 NFL draft.
Top six, it's Trevor Lawrence, still easy for me at number one. Whatever conversation you're hearing about who else should be ahead of him, I've said this on Twitter already, it feels a lot like the conversation people had about Mitch Trubisky going ahead of Deshaun Watson. I feel like Deshaun Watson was so good for so long that people got fatigued with how good he was, to the point where he ended up not being the first quarterback taken in that draft, and he absolutely should have been. I think, obviously, we didn't really see Patrick Mahomes doing what he's doing, so he would be the first quarterback off the board. But in terms of that conversation with Mitchell Trubisky going to the Bears after a trade-up, I think Chicago fans would definitely want to redo on that one in a couple different directions. But as it relates to Trevor Lawrence, that's why he's still number one for me. He will stay number one for me. I think some of that conversation also applies to my number two guy, Justin Fields. I feel like people are starting to poke holes in his game that aren't really there when you really watch the tape and really look at it. And he's still solidly at number two for me. After that's where we see Zach Wilson from BYU. I know we've heard a lot of talk, a lot of rumors that he may be, some team's favorite quarterback in this draft. I understand why teams would like him and what he brings to the table, but he's just not – doesn't have the full body of work, doesn't have the consistency, especially against top teams, that I would like to see from a guy that I would have to put above guys like Lawrence and Fields. You know, after that, it's Trey Lance from North Dakota State, really the wild card at quarterback in this draft. Not a lot to work with in terms of film, and all of it was against, you know, FCS competition. But, man, the athletic ability, the tools, the arm talent is just off the charts with that kid. So he could end up easily being the best of the bunch down the road. We've seen that kind of happen with Josh Allen, the way how raw he was coming out of Wyoming. But, you know, given some time, he's become one of the better quarterbacks in the league. And then after that, it's Mac Jones from Alabama. Nothing really to write home about as an athlete, you know, in terms of his, you know, ability to make plays outside the pocket. He's kind of a throwback in that way, more of a pocket passer. Not a huge arm, but very accurate passer, great decision maker. That's something I know a lot of coaches in the NFL are going to really like in his game. After that, we've got Kyle Trask from Florida, Jamie Newman from Georgia/Wake Forest. He was at Wake Forest, transferred to Georgia, but never actually played a game there. You know, there are tiers to this group. Those top four guys are clear cut to me. That, you know, they're the top of the shelf there. And they should all be gone in the top 10, maybe even the top 8 picks. Hint, hint at Carolina there. But there's a big drop-off there. I think Mac Jones is a distant fifth to that group, and I think after Mac Jones and between him and Trask and then Newman, I think there's another big, big drop-off there to where Jones should be probably a mid-first-round pick, and then I wouldn't really consider either of those other guys until, you know, at some point on day two.
So let's talk about Mac Jones, because in Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock draft release today, he's going to Carolina with the 8th overall pick. The scent I'm picking up from Carolina, honestly, Luke, is desperation at the quarterback position. When you consider what they were going to offer for Matt Stafford, that they would have lost the number 8 pick if Detroit had simply accepted their offer. And now Mac Jones, you just called him a mid first round pick guy. I've seen him late first round pick. I've seen him early second round pick as well. And because Matt Rhule coached him at the Senior Bowl, they fell in love with him. If Carolina selects Mac Jones with the number 8 overall pick, good pick, bad pick for you?
Well, and I'll clarify this a little bit. When I said he was a mid first round pick, that's kind of what. That's adding the positional overvalue of the quarterback, right?
Okay.
In today's NFL, you don't evaluate quarterbacks in a vacuum like you would just a random prospect, right? The fact that they play quarterback and if you succeed at that position gives you such an importance that you're probably going to take a guy who might have a second-round grade. You have to take him in the first round because quarterback's just that important. He's not going to last till the second round. So just for, you know, comparison's sake, I just came out with my updated overall rankings. He's number 46. Right now, in terms of where I see him in relation to the rest of this class. So that kind of gives you an idea of how I feel about taking that guy in the top 10. And again, it's not that he can't be a successful quarterback at the next level. It's just that if I'm taking a quarterback in the top 10, because in most mock drafts you'll see right now, you might not see a defensive player in the top 10 right now. That's how talented this draft class is with those top four quarterbacks. With some of the offensive weapons that they have in this class, you know, offensive line, we may not see a defensive player taken in the top 10. And so if you're talking about getting maybe the best defensive player in the draft, regardless of position at number 8, you're talking about maybe getting a guy like Kyle Pitts, a tight end, wide receiver, weapon for whoever you have throwing the ball. You're talking about maybe getting an offensive tackle to help whoever that quarterback is going to be. There's so many options in terms of elite talent that you're probably going to get at number 8. To take the 5th best quarterback at number 8 overall, just, I mean, again, and a guy I barely have as a top 50 prospect in this draft right now, like I said, he can be a successful quarterback at the next level, but if I'm spending a top 10 pick on a guy, no matter what the position, I've got to get a guy that I think has all-pro, Pro Bowl, top of his position, maybe not Hall of Fame potential, but maybe if I'm picking him in the top 10, right? I got to get that kind of return on a guy, and you're right, it does reek of desperation. The fact that I would, you know, see a team take the 5th best quarterback in the draft, 5th best player at any position in the draft over anybody else that's going to drop. Because say they're in the position that they have to do that because 4 quarterbacks have gone in the top 7. That's only 3 other guys off the board at every other position, and that's driving talent all the way down the board at you. Obviously, you have to have a quarterback to compete in this league. I'm not saying that they don't. But, man, it just feels like a huge reach at that point to take a guy who, yes, had a huge season at Alabama. Yes, Devontae Smith evidently said he would take him over to a Tagovailoa, which, again, you can't really blame the guy because you got to pick a quarterback that just helped you win the Heisman Trophy, right? But I just, in terms of his upside, and I hate that term sometimes because every prospect has some of it, right? But physical tools, the athleticism. He does not bring those things to the table that make you think, man, I've got a really special player at this important position. It makes you think, man, this guy can get the job done if we have the right pieces around him, maybe. But I just don't think, if you're picking number eight, you're not the type of team that's built to succeed by adding just a above average quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, being a quarterback at Alabama presents the reverse problem for a guy like Carson Wentz, for a guy like Trey Lance. The team is so good around you that I don't trust
right.
what I see you doing. I don't trust what I – because it's you know, boys to men is who they're playing every single week, right, against Alabama competition. But I would say this on Mac Jones, Luke. You know, Tom Brady had better than advertised accuracy when he came out of Michigan. We didn't know how accurate he actually was. And his leadership and his work ethic overcame the unimpressive body picture that everyone shows from his combine. Do you see similarities there to where Tom Brady was coming out of school and what Mac Jones brings to the table?
Here's what I'll say about that. If your sentence or whatever you're about to justify your pick with starts with, yeah, but Tom Brady, please stop. Because, yeah, Tom Brady. Of course, Tom Brady. But he's just the one. Like,
yeah.
if you're really, after spending that much time, if you've exhausted all your resources into figuring out if Mac Jones has whatever that special, ridiculous thing that Tom Brady has within his soul that has made him the greatest quarterback in history, in my opinion, if you think he's got that, by all means, spend the eighth pick on him. And it would still be a steal if he ends up being that guy. My only caveat is there's only ever been one guy like that, and we have 256 picks every year, and we haven't found another one in 21 years. So I just don't feel like that's a good bet. Yes, you can draw comparisons between the fact that he has, you know, not, you know, like you said, the athletic skills aren't there, kind of like with Brady, and there are lots of reasons why Brady wasn't picked until the sixth round, right? You know, we can make that argument and say, see, you know, we've learned from that. We know how to prioritize these things. But, man, I feel like what makes Tom Brady special and what has made him special is something that you absolutely cannot quantify in any way in the pre-draft process, because if you could, we would not be here. We would not be having this conversation. Teams would be much better at this. You can't do that. You can't measure what makes Tom Brady who he is. And, again, we've only seen one of them in 20-something years. I don't know if Mac Jones can be that guy, but I feel like the probability says he's not going to be that guy.
What I think about Trevor Lawrence, Luke, is that I value Deshaun Watson above him, and I always have. Now, I think worst-case scenario for Trevor is like a Matt Stafford, Philip Rivers type. But I think there's a high likelihood that that's where he'll end up. Do you see him in the Matt Stafford, Philip Rivers class or much better than that?
I mean, I first of all would classify that as Philip Rivers is a Hall of Famer, so that's not too bad.
I don't know. I don't know.
I think he'll get there whether you like it or not. Is what I'm saying. Is he can be that
I
type
don't like
of player.
It.
And if he's anywhere in that, if he's anywhere in that, well, I don't like that about Roethlisberger or Manning either. But they're going to go. So we just need to start resigning ourselves to that right now. But my point is if you can have a career as long and as productive as those guys have with that pick, I think that's a win. I think that's a huge pick. Now, can you reconcile that with the fact that he's been touted since his freshman season when he did what he did, especially ending that year with the performance against Alabama in the title game? We've already created this expectation of him that if he's not Peyton Manning, he's, you know, selling himself short, right? He didn't live up to it. And again, we go back to the Tom Brady conversation. It's not a fair comparison to anyone. Yes, you can compare, you know, I guess across your, you know, if you have a certain grading scale and you can say, hey, he is the greatest quarterback prospect we've ever scouted. Yeah, sure, you can say that, but nobody should ever expect any quarterback to do what Peyton Manning has done, what Tom Brady has done, because it's just so unique. If you get that guy, that's a bonus, and you definitely draft a guy like Trevor Lawrence because you think he's capable of doing that. But, again, he can have a career that's as productive as Matthew Stafford, but if he does it for a team that surrounds him with a bit better defense or other, you know, pieces around him, he can probably win a lot more games and have some playoff trips and go win some championships, maybe, unlike what Matt Stafford had to deal with in Detroit. And then Philip Rivers was highly successful in San Diego for a long time. and then took to the Colts to the playoffs in his 1 year. So I don't feel like that's a bad comparison. And if he hits that, I don't think that that's really falling short of what realistic expectations should be for anybody. If your expectation for any prospect is that they'll be one of the unicorns of the sport in its history, I feel like you're already setting yourself up for failure.
Luke Easterling joining us here on the show. Let's close on Justin Fields today, Luke. You know, like you touched on earlier in the interview, I feel like his greatness is kind of being picked apart. What he does, I think he does very well. I'm curious how you feel about the floor and the ceiling for Justin Fields. Do you see any Deshaun Watson in him?
I mean, first of all, I'll say, you know, what I think some people consider the elephant in the room, and it's that I think in the media we treat black quarterbacks differently. We have for a long time. We criticize them differently. The narratives that develop.
Why do you think that is?
Process and this,
why? Why do we do that?
I don't have a better answer than racism. I don't.
Okay.
Like, it's just
okay.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
I don't really know how else to say it. Maybe that sounds shocking to some people, but I don't know how else to put it. That's my only explanation. I don't know why otherwise, because if you just look at the football and go back to Deshaun Watson, go back to Lamar Jackson, go back to these conversations that we have every year, Mark, it's the same narrative. It's the same thing, and I feel like that continues to happen only with quarterbacks who look like they do, and I think that's wrong, and I think we have to pay attention to it in order to stop doing it. So the more people I feel like come out and will at least point to it and say, hey, that's what's happening here, I feel like that's the only thing that's going to move us past it. In terms of his football, and this is why that's the only answer for me in a lot of ways, is because if you look at the football, nothing else makes sense. You know, I wrote about this when I was, and you know this, I was so gung-ho on Lamar Jackson coming out.
Yes.
That, you know, I pointed to all of the flaws in the other quarterbacks and how differently they were narrated as opposed to, you know, Lamar Jackson. I viewed Lamar Jackson's athleticism as what put him ahead of the group, because sure, he had flaws as a passer in certain ways, but so did everybody else in that class, and nobody seemed to use those to disqualify them from being the number one overall pick. And why I wrote in that December that he should be the number one quarterback in that draft as the number one pick overall. That's what I said then. I believed it because every quarterback had flaws, but he was the only one who I felt like was being told, you can't succeed at this position, and there was only one other attribute that didn't apply to those other quarterbacks. You know what I'm saying? So it's really hard for me to not look at that and say that that's the only reason, because I just can't find anything else, especially football-related, for it to be caused by.
Luke Easterling does a fantastic job covering the NFL draft, covering the world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Draft Wire, at the Bucks Wire. Follow him on Twitter, at Luke Easterling. Check out his work, draftwire.usatoday.com. Luke, I brought the heat today, man, and you hit the fastball. So thank you so much, man. Always great to catch up with you.
Hey, it's always a good time, Mark. Thanks, buddy.
You got it. All right, Luke Easterling, USA Today, one of the best draft guys in the entire country, ladies and gentlemen. All right, everybody, it's time for us to do our thing called Either Or, a couple of options on life and sports. Either Or starts right now.
Pop quiz, hotshot.
All right, I'm going to give you a choice. You can either have the money and the hammer, or you can walk out of here. You can't have both.
Give me the sword or fight.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
What do you do? What do you do?
All right, Diesel, a Zoom court hearing in Texas took a detour when an attorney showed up looking like a kitten. I heard about this. That's because of a Zoom filter that had been activated on the attorney's device. Diesel, if you had to be converted to an animal for a filter in a very important meeting, what animal best suits you?
Gorilla. Gorilla's tough. A gorilla is not expected to be that smart, which I'm very adept at being.
Oh, really?
Yeah, people don't expect too much out of the gorilla. So give me that one.
I'm going to be the giraffe because I can haul, and I am tall, and I can handle my business, kid. I'm going to be the giraffe if I have to be a filter. You see this video, Diesel?
Yeah,
Funniest thing I've seen. Literally funniest thing I've seen. Like the most serious meeting of all time, and this guy can't get the cat filter off him. Man, I was dying. What you got?
All right, so Brent Beard has made it well known that Sandy, Candy, and Mandy are after you. Well, I've just obtained some information that there is a fourth sister named Brandy, and she wants to know, Mark Ryan, are you into dogs or cats?
That she can ask me anything she wants. That's what she wants?
That's what she wants to know.
I was just talking to Alyssa about this during the show. Alyssa trains dogs and works with dogs with bad behavior and so on and so forth. I'm a dog person.
Is that why they put her out there with you?
I think so. I think so because she's used to dealing with dogs, right? But Diesel, here's the thing. I have a dilemma, man. I want a dog badly, okay? But I'm hosting the show from home. One knock on the door, one dog walks by outside. The show comes to a screeching halt, man. I think I have to get a cat, but I don't want a cat.
Yeah.
I want a dog. My parents' dog back home in Florida does not bark. If any of y'all know of any dog that does not bark, that's what I need. That's what I want.
Okay.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah, I've been a dog person all my life. We've had dogs at my parents' house. But for the longest time, I've wanted a big dog. I want a Doberman. And you couldn't put a Doberman in an apartment. You could, but it just seemed cruel. So I held off for the longest time. And Ashley absolutely loves cats. We now have two cats. And they're good pets. They're great pets. I love them. But I'm still a dog person at heart.
I would agree. And then finally, we have a clip from Luke Easterling. In the previous interview, I said, why is Justin Fields judged differently? And he said that African-American quarterbacks are just evaluated differently. And then, we'll just let the interview take over from here. Let's close on Justin Fields today. Feel like his greatness is kind of being picked apart. What he does, I think he does very well. I'm curious how you feel about the floor and the ceiling for Justin Fields. Do you see any Deshaun Watson in him?
I mean, first of all, I'll say, you know, what I think some people consider the elephant in the room, and it's that I think in the media we treat black quarterbacks differently. We have for a long time. We criticize them differently. The narratives that develop.
Why do you think that is?
Process and this,
why? Why do we do that?
I don't have a better answer than racism. I don't.
Okay,
like,
there you go. Okay. There you go. The words of Luke Easterling. He says, due to racism, we evaluate black quarterbacks differently. Diesel, the question is, we're not closing the show with a softball today. We're closing it with a fastball. Is Luke right?
Yes, I think he is right. I think he is right. We evaluate black quarterbacks on their athletic prowess, but we tend to evaluate white quarterbacks on their intelligence and their management skills. There are two very distinct set of skills that really you talk about. Those are, you know, if you've got all of that, you're a complete quarterback, right? If you're athletic and you're intelligent, you're the total package. But when we evaluate black quarterbacks, we tend to focus on their athletic prowess and not on their intelligence.
Boy, and I also agree, sadly. For me, I think, you know, you read enough scouting reports, and the scouting reports, there's always, like, concerns about accuracy with African-American quarterbacks, and then you look at the numbers, and it's totally unfounded. It's totally unfounded. And so, you know, why did Deshaun Watson slip? Why did Justin Fields slip? Are those old-school values really at play here? Is Luke Easterling right? Sadly, a shake of the magic eight ball says it is decidedly so. All right, folks, that is either or for today. We will close the show with a take to take with you, and we'll do so next, live on location, right here at Ingles Markets, 1500 Gear Parkway in Travelers Rest. This is Offsides. All right, it is Offsides. Mark and Diesel right here on ESPN Upstate. Fantastic to have you guys with us. Check on the text line. Texter says, straight fastballs today. Great show, man. Thanks so much. And this is always, Diesel, what the text line looks like wherever I've been. you've got a compliment, and then you've got the texter below who says, wow, Race Baiters 101. Look, man, some things are factual, and that is exactly what we just covered. When you see the same thing happen over and over and over again without a valid reason why, right? Explain to me, please, why Mitchell Trubisky was drafted ahead of Deshaun Watson. And it comes back to, unfortunately, a stereotype. And Chicago is paying handsomely with their reputation for not having drafted Deshaun Watson. I'll go as far as to say that they'd have a Super Bowl now had they drafted Deshaun Watson. Let's see here. Texter says, get a dog that has its voice box removed. That's not very nice. Texter says, Luke for president, Turian, who will be hosting a segment of this show tomorrow. Ask Roy Williams, Mark, if he wished he hadn't scheduled Wofford in recent seasons. Yeah, Wofford's beaten him. What happens when he comes to Carolina and the Panthers sell the farm to get him? And then Deshaun Watson has no talent around him. So says a texter. Yeah, that's going to be the problem wherever he goes. You know, and that's in that sense, Deshaun is kind of damned if he does and damned if he doesn't, right? If he stays in Houston, he's in a place he doesn't want to be. Wherever he goes is going to be starved of draft picks and good players for years. That the cupboard is going to be bare. They will be fleeced and robbed in this trade, man. Texter says, y'all just lost you number one spot thanks to the Dumas Diesel. That must be about the North Carolina thing, Diesel. That's all I can say. Hey, y'all, Diesel is backtracking. Hashtag FOH.
I didn't backtrack on anything. I told you flat out on this air that I grew up in North Carolina, and yes, that stereotype or that mentality is real. North Carolinians do think they're better than South Carolinians.
I'm more interested if you believe that. That's what I'm interested in. Okay, Mark, you're in Traveler's Rest today. Not sure if you're an AMA Supercross fan, but the greatest drivers of all time are driving dirt race cars tonight at Traveler's Rest. I've got to get out to that park, man. I really, really do. Keenan Stadium, UNC, had to tailgate in a parking garage for 4 hours. It was miserable. Yeah, we were asking you guys for the worst, the biggest dumps of stadiums that you've ever seen or been a part of. Red Watson takes exception to us mentioning, to somebody mentioning the Greer Stadium, Greer City Stadium. He says, we own that facility. It's the nicest youth football field in Greenville County. Built in 1936, it was the former field for the Greer Yellow Jackets. Lots of history there. Vol Nation says, the Liberty Bowl was terrible. Mark the walk where you would park for NRG Stadium in Houston. You walk through a really suspicious neighborhood. You feel fortunate just to get to the stadium. He also says, worst of the worst, Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati, Turner Field is terrible. The Vet in Philadelphia was horrific. We've asked you for the worst all-time stadiums that you've been in. Send them to us via the text line. Send them to me on Twitter, at Mark Ryan on Air. That's at M-A-R-C Ryan on Air. Big thanks to Diesel today. Big thanks to Diesel today. Huge thanks to Ruby, who makes all this possible. She is amazing, and Alyssa as well. Alyssa and I had a terrible tumble today, but we survived. We absolutely survived. I appreciate you guys so much. Thanks for all you do to make this show possible. And we will see you guys at Ingles.